This is Shane Warne. Make sure you plough on.
Do plough and CC. Plough on, guys. Thank you much.
We didn't win the link by accident. We did that by design. It was very much planned.
I just try to get it in the right spot, really, and see what happens.
He said to me, mate, I really think you should put your lid on. Next ball, Bournemouth answer. We've been for six. So.
This club is beyond cricket.
Plough's cricket is the greatest club in the world.
Hello, and welcome to the Thanks for Coming podcast. My name is Umar, and I'm your host for this week. Joining me today from the other side of London, he is the Senior Director of Technology and Innovation at Plough & CC, and resident Bob the Builder, Max Wright. How are you, Max?
Evening, Umar. Thank you very much. I'm a big fan of my new nickname given to me by an eight-year-old on Sunday. But yes, lovely to be here and with our two wonderful guests.
We will get to introducing the guests in a second. They're very special guests indeed. However, let's do a quick synopsis of what's to come. So in this week's edition, we have an excellent lineup as usual. We'll have all four match reports from this weekend's fixtures. We'll have the usual fantasy updates and any other business. In addition to this, we have a very special segment on the grassroots of women's cricket. We've also scoured the plough far and wide for your best athletes in the plough Olympics. We have an exciting fielding masterclass from a top plough fielder, and I don't mean Iskander Eaton, and top tips from batting from one of our premier plough batsmen. And do we have a treat for the bowlers at the Ploughman's Cricket Club? Before we get to any of this, I'd like to ask Max a little bit more about his excellent sledge on Sunday.
Yeah, so as I came out to bat, I was shouted at that I looked like Bob the Builder because I was wearing a yellow helmet, which was a bit harsh, but also it's quite good chat given it was from a teenager, although he's a lot closer to the age of Bob the Builder target market, so maybe he'd been watching an episode that morning, I don't know. But yeah, that's out there with Tom Lonnon's Marmite for yellow lid. So keep anything else who wears a yellow hat. I've been called Fireman Sam in it before as well. So similar genre of joke.
Excellent chat from a teenager. So we have two very exciting guests for us joining us today. I have the absolute pleasure to introduce you to a man who recently came back to cricket. The only man at Plough who can give Angry Dad Lonnon a run for his title. He hates it when umpires watch YouTube while he's bowling. Ed Beasley, thanks for coming.
Thank you, guys. What a pleasure to be here. Really happy to be here. I don't know what knowledge I can impart, but I can certainly try. Really looking forward to the show.
Well, Bees, this is your first time on the pod, and what we always do is ask a couple of questions. You'll probably be aware of this from past episodes. So can you tell us your origin story? How did you meet the plough?
Well, the origin story, me tracking my origin story started by looking through my emails this morning to find out when I first sent an email to the plough. It was June 2013. I was working with a guy called Freddie Mills at the time at a school in Chelsea. And we had a cricket match coming up, and anyone of able body volunteered, including myself at the time. And we played a match. It went really well. I hit the ball out of Burton Court in Chelsea and bowled reasonably well. And Freddie said, "Do you fancy playing a bit more cricket?" And I replied with yes. And played that Saturday, in fact. Got a fiver, played the next Sunday, got 49, and I've been hanging about loosely ever since. So there's my origin story, thanks to Freddie Mills. And obviously 2013 was a very different period in Plough's history, I can assure you of that.
What a lovely story. And imagine you and Freddie being allowed in a school.
Perish the thought.
Now, Ed, following that fantastic story, we'd love to know who is your favorite Ploughman's player. I don't want to know who's your favorite batsman, who's your favorite drinking buddy, who's your favorite bowler. We need to know who is your favorite
Ploughman. Well, do you know, So the one of the very first plough I met, and he was so welcoming. And I've been asked this question by people who join the plough and who's your favourite ploughman. I always say the same name. I'm going to say the same name now. Richard Buckley. Superbly kind human being, very welcoming, like I said at the time, and I've never forgotten it. So he remains to this day my favourite ploughman.
Amazing. Thank you. What an insightful answer. Now, Max, I believe you also have a very special guest today.
Yes, I do also have a very special guest to introduce. He's best known for two things. One is a Marlboro Light and the other is bowling absolute demon swing bowling on a Saturday afternoon. It's Mr. Puff Ashish Paul. Puff, how are you doing?
Doing very well, mate. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. Well, could you give us a quick overview of how you found the plough when you first joined?
So I used to work with a lady named Audrey, and her husband, Gert, who's a Safa, used to play for the plough. So we were talking cricket one day with Audrey, and he said, my husband plays for the plough. And I said, well, do you want to join? I said, yeah, why not? I'll give it a go. And then from there, I went to the Oval Nets one evening, and someone said, actually not so bad. And I was surprised myself. So, yeah. From then, and the rest is history.
And what year was that?
Oh, from 2009, I think. 2008 or 9. Or 10. Yeah, 8 or 9.
Quick follow-up question. How much better is your son at cricket than you?
Much better. But I have a better line and length. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he's not going to win the Obsessed with Line and Length award anytime soon, but that's your domain. And as we did with Bees, Puff, who is your favourite ploughman?
Tracy Cox is my favourite ploughman. I think when I joined the plough, I think Tracy Cox is Cox's wife, if you guys didn't know. So when I joined the club, yeah, there were many guys around who were kind to me, but she was very nice and very welcoming. I believe back in the day she used to do some teas, met at the club day where she and a couple of ladies did most of the cooking. So yeah, and I felt very welcome. And mind you, this was my first year or second year in the country.
Amazing. Bees looked very offended that he wasn't your name of choice there, but we move on.
I put you at number 4, please.
Thanks. Top 5. That's all right.
4 is my favourite number.
So, Richard Buckley and Tracy Cox, a couple of legends of the club. Moving on. This weekend, or the previous weekend, the Plough once again fielded 4 sides, no less than 4 sides this weekend. With the ones having a bye this time around, this week, we thought it'd be best to start with the Saturday's 2s league match. Ed Beasley, you were playing in this match. Can you tell us a resounding account, please?
I was there, affirmative. So were you. So were you, my friend. Take you through the Saturday 2s league game. Wimbledon Corinthians, this was our home-from-home fixture. Was not at the DSG, sadly. It was at the home of the notorious Ali CC, which some of our newer members won't know about, but some of our older ones will remember them fondly. However, it was not a repeat of Ali CC days. Sadly, we got off to a rather rocky start, not knowing when the start was. It was a 12:30 start, not a 12:30 meet, as we originally had down. So not a great way to start a league game, but toss forfeited, into bat we went. Leo N and Mr. Ainsley opened up the batting. Coming in at 3 was Umar, 4 was Logan. Listen, Wimbledon Corinthians, they weren't a particularly overwhelming outfit. They had some decent bowlers, nothing particularly worthy of nightmares. Our start was a bit shaky, however. Ainsley was caught behind for 3, so that was 4 for 1. Umar caught behind for 6, that was 13 for 2. At this stage, Logan came in, He played rather well. He did, however, hole out at deep mid-off for 28 off 23. That kept us at 56 for three. And then there was some rather sensible batting. There was exactly 100 partnership between Leo and Benny, who Benny managed 44 off 47. Leo managed 77 off 97. I'll go back to that performance later. Disappointingly, our last six wickets went for two runs. And there was a lad on their team called Mohib who thought Christmas must be coming really rather early this year, as he grabbed four wickets in a single over. God knows how, but he did. And we reached 203 for a total, which I would say, Umar can butt in and tell me if I'm wildly out here, but I'd say that was 250 plus par on that pitch, probably nearer 300 possibly. So then we set about the task of defending 203 on a 250 plus pitch, which was going to require something special in the field. We tried. They were very keen on getting the ball off the square, with the exception of their fourth and fifth batsmen. They were all prepared to come in, play shots, get their innings off to a good start. I think, again, Umar, butt in, please feel free if I'm saying anything out of turn. It would be very unfair to say we fielded and bowled badly, because we didn't. I just don't think we went about it in a way that was going to win us that cricket match, personally. So, looking back at their innings, Logan took a couple of wickets. He took two worldy catches, one of which I can envisage the batsman still sat on the boundary shaking his head going, what just happened? It was that good. They finished 204 for six off 35 and a half overs. Bowling wise, like I said, Logan took a couple. I took a couple, two for 35 off my eight. Drew took one for 38 off his eight. We were probably the most economical. That was Saturday's game. Sadly, a loss. I think everyone involved would be able to look back and go, we could have won that if it approached it slightly differently.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you there. I thought we were probably about 50 runs short there. And if we, you know, a couple of decisions gone our way, we probably would have been right in it. And I think potentially on the bowling side, there may have been a few too many extras. I know for a fact that if it had been Angry Dad captaining, he would have been up in arms about it. But yeah, we move on. We'll move on to next week. So the other game on Saturday, over to you, Max, for introductions to that.
Yes, well, very fortunately for the beer drinkers amongst us, we were actually across the road playing against Morden CC. So the Northern Line was populated heavily with Plough on Saturday. And Puff and I were part of the team that went to play a friendly match on a Saturday against Morden. Puff, you were skipper. How did it go at the toss?
Firstly, correction, that was not a friendly 11, that was a first 11, by the way. The other one is a second 11. So on Saturday, either you have a first 11 or a second 11. We were part of the first 11, Max.
Yeah, of course, my first team debut.
Yes, yeah, it was a great day overall. Great day, very good host. Historically, they've always been good hosts, Morden CC. And as always, brilliant tea. Played some good cricket. All that being said, we lost the game. To start with, so we won the toss, and I straightaway elected to bat, much to the disappointment of Morden CC, who really fancied batting against us, and they were ready to score, you know, big runs, rather 270, 300. So they were disappointed. We batted first. Given the lineup, I had many volunteers who wanted to open the innings. Max Wright, you were one of them. Trent, the other one.
I believe the precise wording of my text on Thursday was, I'd like to bat about six or seven, which I don't know if that counts as volunteering to open.
Yes, you did six or seven, and I said, did you want to open? So you were sure, why not? And you wanted to bowl eight overs as well, which didn't happen, thankfully. So yeah, Max Wright and Trent opened the innings for us. Max Wright got out to what he claimed was an absolute beach of a delivery, although Trent thought he missed a straight one. So,
yeah, second ball of the match. I had my whites back on by my shorts back on by 8 past 1, which is a slightly chastising moment.
So yes, so I was skipper that day, so I sort of thought I'll exercise my power and put myself on number 3. Turned out to be a good decision at the end of it. And I was supported. Trent got out again to an absolute, a brilliant in-swing ball, pitch outside off and took his leg stump. No shame getting out of such deliveries. And in walked Alec Gordon-Walker, who tried to score a few quick runs, but wasn't successful. He got a couple and then, got out straight away. And Reese came into the crease, and we together built a very good partnership. I think at the end of it, we built a partnership of about 72 runs between us. And that got us to about 108 odd. And then I got out in the 32nd over, and then out about 130 runs, and the rest of the team, they pushed hard and got another 25 odd runs of the last 5 overs. And the good news is everyone got a game, everyone got a bat. John Walton scored his first runs for the plow. Who else scored? Saidi scored his first runs for the plow.
Well, Saidi scored his first runs in cricket. So
in cricket, actually. Oh, really?
In cricket completely. So very well done to him. I think he guided it nicely between first slip and gully, using not the full face of the bat, but runs are runs. We take him into it. Got more than I did on the day. But yeah, I think we knew going to Morden that we wanted we needed quite a few runs. So we were happy to get to 150 in the end, given a mini collapse, and had at least something to bowl at.
Yes, and given the team we had about 7-8 bowlers, so we were quite, confident to defend 152. We actually were looking pretty good halfway. We got them down 6 down for 70 odd, but the 7th wicket held pretty solidly, and they crossed the line at the end of the 34th or 36th over.
Yes, it was an interesting one because I thought we bowled and fielded reasonably well. They just batted very sensibly, especially the number 6 bat, who got 44 not out at the end. But some good fielding all round. A great slip catch from Alex Gordon-Walker. A great catch in covers by Damon Greeny as well. John Walton getting his first wicket for the club.
True. All in all, I think it was a great day of cricket.
Indeed. And I think... Sorry, Gopoff.
I really wanted to play with some of the new guys that have joined the club. So it was a great day for me. Played with Alex Walker for the first time, Saidi, Sai, John Walton. I haven't played with Yanni for a long time, so got a chance to play with Yanni as well. So it was a great day.
Yeah, and it was just he won't say it himself, but Puff was magnificent. He scored 55, so beautiful half century. He got a run out and got a wicket as well. So it's a lovely day out for Puff. The run out was of the 14-year-old for the opposition, so I don't think you should get too excited about it. But it was still very well fielded.
Thanks, mate.
So two losses on Saturday for the plow.
But before we go into the Sunday match, let's first take a break and go into round one of our plow Olympics.
T-Rex, if the plow Olympics was tomorrow, who would you back to win the marathon?
Tom Lonnan. That tenacity, just that. He's got the mongrel in him that he would just go all day. All day. He'd bowl 10 straight, he'd bat at 5, and he'd just bat the oppo out of the team.
Ains, quick question for you. We're here with Michael Ainsley. Ains, who would win in the Plough Olympics the javelin throw?
Ooh. So I'd go to AJ Prasad, knowing he's got a good arm, and he knows he's got a good arm. But then, Drew Withers today, effortless. Thunderbolts from the boundary. I would say Drew Withers.
So a Melbourne versus Newcastle
throw off.
Javel off.
Yeah. Not a javelin, a javel off. Puff, in the Plough Olympics, if the Plough Olympics was tomorrow, who would you reckon would win the table tennis?
Coxie.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Why's that?
Well, he's, you know, he seems like he can swing a little racket, you know, fucking quite hard, I would say.
Thanks.
We are here with the Drew Withers. Drew, at the Plough Olympics, who do you think would be the best gymnast?
Best gymnast, yeah. Well, I think, you know, and he actually looks like it because he's got a great sort of body for an older fellow. But Damon, I think he could do anything.
Like, you fancy him on the uneven bars?
I fancy him on anything. I'll just, if, you know, if I was a gambling man, I would, and he was in any event, if he was he should actually be a decathlon athlete because he can do anything, Damon. I'm looking at him now and it's just, wow, what a physique. Yeah, that's all I've got. Question.
So I'm here with Alex Gordon-Walker and I'm going to ask him, for the Plough Olympics, who do you reckon would win the badminton?
Playing badminton?
Yeah.
I think myself or yourself.
You or me? Yeah. Yep.
I do think that because we'd just sledge each other and it would be a good laugh. What's that got to do with cricket?
Nothing. Sound of my own voice.
We are here with the most handsome man in the Plough, Damon Greeny, at the Plough Olympics. Who would win in fencing?
Oh, fencing. AJ Prasad. He comes forward on the front foot. He's he's always moving forward. And isn't that what you do in fencing? It's kind of, what do they call it? It's jab, 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 poke, 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 something like that.
And if there's anything to describe AJ, it is jab, 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 poke, poke, poke. Thanks, Damo. So I'm here with the famous Greg Willis. Greg,
No Tash Willis.
Greg, in the Plough Olympics, who are you backing to take home the shot put gold?
Ooh. Grazer. Reckon he's got the meat on him.
So I'm here with Logan again. Logan, who do you reckon would win the 100 metres of the Plough?
I'm going to say Max Gumpert.
There you go.
So we're here with Benny Cobbett. Cobbett has had a great day, scored some runs, bowled some overs. I don't know if he got wickets.
Just the one.
So, Benny, at the Plough Olympics, if they were to take place tomorrow, and you get a bye, you can choose more than one person, who would be your... Actually, let's go five people. Who would be your team for synchronized swimming?
Synchronized swimming. Oh, a bit of elegance. I think it's going to be everyone who bats with just lovely shots. Probably in the middle of the team, I think I put Brito. Butlin. Just that. You see, one cover drive and I was done. That was it. I'm putting Logan in there. I'm sure he probably knows how to dive. The guy does nothing
and
wrong.
He looks great in a bikini.
His mankini is just fucking... Oh, boys. That's three. I put myself in there just for a bit of entertainment for the crowd. But good belly flop. One more. Oh, God, who do we play with? There's only 140 people in this club. Max. I think like a hair... Gumpert, when he comes out, when that hair would be wet. Oh. Or even if he had to get in a swim cap, it would be like...
It would be sticking like, out.
Yeah, he'd look like Megamind.
Cheers, Benny.
So, back to you, Ed, for the home match on Sunday. How did that go for Plough? Who were we playing? Who was captain? What went down?
Brighter it was. We turned out a gold 11 I was involved in on Sunday, turned up at the DSG to play Vishwa CC, who Max Gumpert, that is, who was captain for the day, was informing us of various personnel they had of high quality. It appeared they didn't turn up. They were a little short on bodies, so first mention must go to a chap called Marcus, who I believe is Tom Glyn Jones's housemate, who became the extra man for the opposition on the day, which was a fantastic level of commitment. Didn't know anyone on the team, stuck it out, performed, good lad. Anyway, Vishwa, they batted first. Drew Withers and some clown by the name of Beasley opened the bowling. Didn't take Drew too long to get the initial lacquer of paint off the new plough set of stumps as he hammered their number two stumps out of the ground. He left for one. Number three came in. They were both struggling to get the ball off the square, to be honest. So I bagged a second wicket. 18 for two they were off their first, I think it was the first 12 overs, 18 for two. I came off after bowling my seven. Dan Rumford, birthday boy, complete with birthday hangover, and Nigel picked up the ends, and they picked up the wickets of numbers three, four, and five. The number six came in with a little bit more confidence than his teammates, and he did a really solid job. That guy finished on 51 not out. He was a very capable batsman, good all-round cricketer. But the others sadly continued to fall around him. Alex Webster bowled great, got a couple of wickets. Nige bowled beautifully, a couple of wickets. Like I said, Dan picked up three on his birthday, which was no mean feat. Our attitude in the field was absolutely top-notch. Superb fielding display, really disciplined indeed. Cannot go without mentioning a worldie of a catch from Tom Glyn Jones in the covers. Guy stepped forward, nailed it about head height. Stuck out his hand, grabbed it with the other one. There was the look of utter dismay upon batsman's face. But nice one, Tom. That was a superb catch to remove their number five. So they finished 119 all out. Obviously, we came into bat. Hansi and Yanni opened up. To be fair, both got decent deliveries, fell early-ish. So we were 14 for two. Obviously, we thought we would bash them off no time at all, but a bit of a stutter at the start. In came Rohin, who I haven't met before. I don't know how many of you guys on this pod have met Rohin. A quality batsman. Fantasy cricket enthusiasts remember that name. Top quality batsman. He fell for 17, got a leading edge, caught and bowled back to the bowler. Simon Crane came in, did a decent job. He picked up at 17 runs. And then it turns into the Gumpert, Webster and Withers show as they were smacking it to all parts of the ground. Max finished with 48 off roughly half as many balls. Alex Webster, 14 not out. Drew, 13 not out, got us over the line. And that took us just under 17 and a half overs to get the 1-2-2-4-5. But it was a cracking game of cricket. Really good bunch of blokes, the opposition. And again, shout out to Marcus, who turned up to fill in on the day to make things a little bit more sensible and even. But yeah, great day out. Really enjoyed it.
It's brilliant to hear. It's lovely to have a win at the DSG, especially as there's only a couple of weeks of cricket left there before football and rugby takes over. So let's leave our mark on there and kick off Sunday with a nice result after Saturday's disappointments.
The other Saturday game saw the Plough take on Actonians away at the Actonians pitch somewhere in Ealing. And luckily, myself, Max and Puff were all part of this team. Max, tell us about the day.
So it was a nice day for cricket to start with, definitely. It was slightly overcast, but warm enough that you didn't need to worry about a jumper, which is a nice end of season aesthetic to be playing cricket in. The pitch had definitely seen better days, however. It was pretty bumpy outfield, shall we say. I think the warm, dry weather recently has not helped them. But we did take a look out at the opposition and realised that most of them were about 14 years old, which was quite surprising. Upon word of their skipper, apparently they had a few drop out the day before, so we're filling in some names. And we went out to do the toss. Skipper was Simon Carson, and he lost the toss, which the opposition decided to bat first, walked back to the boundary, changed their mind and decided to bowl first. Given we wanted to bat, that was a pretty good piece of news for us. As we were getting our whites on, we could take them off again. And always made it easier. They had a professional scorer, a bar right by the pitch, and a little balcony for us all to sit and watch the game on. So the lovely combination of things for us to start the day of cricket. And Umar and Steve Britto opened the batting. And that's pretty much the headline news for the innings, really, as they took on made the highest century, the highest partnership opening the batting for the club this season, as we were 127 for naught. Both players making their 50s. Umar with a lovely 77?
72.
I think it was. 72, and Britto with about 60. So it was a good, solid opening pair, both of them picking off the bad balls, playing sensibly, going at... I think I was scoring at the time, and there was, I think the first 10 overs, every over went from between 4 and 6. So it was just consistent scoring, finding the gaps, picking the bad ball, which when you're batting first is exactly what you need to be doing. There was then maybe a minor collapse. There was a few wickets lost, which wasn't ideal for us. Fletcher, Scantlebury and Prasad all combining for only 7 runs between them. And then skipper Simon Carson popped himself in at batting number 6. He didn't have an average for the season, so he fancied bowling it, batting a bit higher up. He made 9, including 1-4, before getting absolutely cooked by Michael Scantlebury for a run out. So that was then I came in and hit pretty happy with 34 off 25 balls, running a lot of 2s, which I wasn't very happy about. The pitch was a bit too slow. Don't like doing that, but that was a good little knock at the end. Pretty happy with, supported by Niraj.
You've got to hit the ball a bit harder, mate.
Yeah, I did have to hit the ball a bit harder. But Niraj, Puff, Harvey and Damon all came in and did a bit of a job to help me out the other end. And we finished on 209 for 9 in 35 overs, which we thought was a pretty good score, more than a run a ball. And we knew we had some very good bowling in Damon, Harvey and Puff especially, ready to try and get rid of the Actonians lineup. And then, we went out to bowl, opening up with Damon Greeny and Ashish Paul, which I think on a Sunday is almost a cheat code to open up with those two. It was excellent stuff. Damon, the opening pair started pretty well, so we were getting our heads into the game, trying to get on top of them. Damon removed the opener finally for 33. With an in-swinging Yorker on the last ball of his first spell. And then immediately afterwards, Harvey came from the other end with his first ball in his first over and was got the caught behind. So that was pretty good for us to open up with a couple of wickets in that middle spell when they started getting ahead of the game. A couple of wickets fell quickly. Niraj got a caught and bowled. I thought Niraj bowled superbly. He only ended up taking 1 wicket, but he bowled 7 overs for 35. With 1 wicket in there, but I thought he was absolutely excellent. Then they got a bit of a partnership going, so they were 52 for 3, and they got a 70-run partnership before I was surprisingly given the ball for a bowl, having pestered the skipper. Only my second bowl for the club, managed to get rid of one of the players to end that partnership, which was, I think, a shock to literally everyone on the pitch, including the batsman. And then we... Skipper Carson got 2 LBWs in an over, so he upped his wicket taking capacity for the season, finishing on with 7 overs, 38 runs, 2 wickets, which is a very good day out for him. And eventually the Actonian CC team ran out of steam a bit. We didn't quite get all the wickets, but they finished 178 off 8 off 35 overs for 8, so they lost by 31 runs.
Excellent. So a happy end to the weekend for the plow. Let's go back to some of the games over the weekend to talk a little bit more about the Plow Olympics.
We're here with Plow's resident musician, Ben Fletcher. Fletch, if the Plow Olympics was tomorrow, who would you pick in your 4x100 metre relay team?
That's a very good question. I think Umar would be up there. I'm looking around and there aren't many really quick people around us.
See, you don't think
I'd pick myself.
Yeah.
I'd pick Leo.
Yeah.
Connolly, that is.
Yeah. Who's drawing the anchor leg? Who's finishing it off for you here?
Who's bringing it home? Oh, it's quite stressful. You, Max. It's you.
Me? Yeah, oh, the slowest anchor leg in history. But thank you very much.
You're bringing it home.
Cheers, mate. Thank you. Something much sillier.
We're here with AJ Prasad, the better AJ, as he's known.
Yep.
AJ, if the winter... AJ, we're coming into the end of the season, it's going to be winter soon.
Yeah.
If the winter Plow Olympics were to take place, who would be your man for the curling?
For the curling. Josh Kerr likes to get on the floor. We've all learned that from the week before. So maybe him. Who else? We know that Damo likes to just... Damo just loves it.
He does get a bit of curl on the ball.
But I might go for Tom Elmsley.
Elmo.
He curls it. When he bowls,
got the wrist spin.
Yeah, and he's aerodynamic with due to the lack of hair. So I think there's a lot going for him. And he's my boy. So there you go. Tom Elmsley.
Thanks, AJ.
So we're here with Sahil from Old Ectonians. Sahil, based on the power you've seen today, who would be the best high jumper in an episode of Plow Olympics?
By the way, first of all, we are not old Ectonians anymore. We are Ectonians now.
Current Ectonians.
Yeah, we are young Ectonians. I think your wicketkeeper was the most fittest guy on the...
Ben Fletcher.
Yeah, he was very active. I think one of the best keepers I've seen over a long time. So maybe, and he was jumping high.
So thank you very much.
We're here with Scants. Michael, thanks for coming. If we were to have Plow Olympics tomorrow... Mm-hmm. Who would be the winner of the 400 meter sprint?
Oh, what a question. I'll tell you.
Niraj?
I've watched him across the outfield.
Yeah?
Like a swan out there. Swan out there running? What is it? No, gazelle.
Swan's renowned for their running.
Elegant. Elegant man out there.
Thank you. So I'm here with Harvey Stevens. Harvey, if the Plow Olympics was tomorrow...
The better Stevens.
If the Plow Olympics were tomorrow, who would you back to win the time trial cycling?
Probably Leon Parks.
That's a very good shout. He's very good at that.
So, we're here with the Harry Davis. Yes, that one. Harry, if the Plow Olympics were to take place tomorrow, who would win the 100-meter butterfly?
Tisato, long body, long arms, is racing down there, surely.
There we go. Harry paying attention. Harry paying attention.
Now, Beasley mentioned earlier about Logan Kassin and his catches taken on Saturday. One of those catches was an absolute blinder, and I can second Beasley's thoughts that the batsman was sat outside the ropes, still shaking his head. It was an incredible catch. So we caught up with Logan to talk to us a little bit more about fielding and how and what it takes to be the best fielder in the Plow.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Plow, we are here at Morden CC following two Saturday games, and we are here with first team cover fielder specialist Logan Kassin. Hi, Logan.
Hey, mate. How you
going? All good, mate. You took some excellent catches today, and you clearly own that cover position. Can you give us some tips on how to be prepared and ready in the field?
I basically
when the bowler's about to come in, I just say that I'm going to take a screamer every ball, and sometimes it comes off.
Interesting. So what you're saying is you almost manifest great catches for yourself. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, you can't always do well with a bat or ball. So, I don't know, you get a lot of opportunities when you're out in the field. And as soon as someone comes in, I don't know, you just anticipate you're going to make a scream and change the game.
Would you say that you wake up in the morning thinking you're going to take some great catches and great stops?
I probably don't go as far as that, but as soon as I hit the wicket, then yeah, definitely like, yeah, body on the line. If the ball's coming to me, I'm diving for it. The ball comes in the air, I'm going to catch it. That sort of mentality.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Before we let you go and get back to your beer, could you tell us, and the plough, your top tips for fielding in the covers or fielding in general?
I think one thing that I think doesn't get looked at is angles. Like, use your angles. Know your strengths. So if you've got a strong right hand, or you move off your right foot quicker, and you know the batsman tends to play straighter or they tend to play squarer, sort of position yourself so that you open up that side, your strength for you, and your weakness is kind of like covered.
You're minimizing your weaknesses.
Yeah. So I think angles is a big thing, and I think people need to, when they're fielding, need to sort of look at it like they would with the bowling and batting, where they look at the fine finesse details.
There you have it, listeners. Logan Cassin telling you to watch your angles. Thank you so much, Logan. Thanks for coming.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Cricket.
Now, following the recap of last weekend's cricket, let's catch up with our experts and our guests on fantasy cricket.
Yes, thank you, Umar. We're getting really to the hot stuff at the end of the season here for the Ploughman CC Fantasy League. There are many players still within a shout of winning a few personal titles, but the main league looks like to be a two-horse race at this point. Trent Catanzariti's jogs around top all year, 15,242 points. But less than 200 points behind top 10 fielders in the club, Matt Spencer. So one good week either way for both of them could really move the needle. Spence could make an inspired captaincy pick, but who knows. This week, the top scoring team was Chris Roden-Smith's team. I left my gloves at the DSG, who scored 1,209 points, helped by the triple captaining of none other than Drew Withers. Features stars such as Brito, Umar, Damo, and Puff in his team, which is a pretty outstanding lineup. Moving you up into the top five squads in the competition, Matt Spencer was indeed second this week, so that really gained him some places. Trent jogs all round, over 200 points back on Matt Spencer. So could this be the typical annual Trent crumble after last year's throwing it away at the death? In terms of players this week, the best batter was none other than Umar Iqbal with 128 points, 2 days of cricket and two good scores. Well, one good score and one score. Leo Nibor also doing very well, 97 points. In terms of bowlers, I don't know if we've picked the guest properly here, but Ashish Paul, the top bowler for the week, 162 points. Wickets on both days, runs on both days, catches, runouts, you name it, Puff was around. And also Drew Withers with 136 points did very well. He's selected by 49% of teams, which is the highest percentage of any bowler to be selected. And a lot of people triple captained in this week, I know, so that was a inspired decision if you did that. All-rounders, Logan was top with 98 points, and wicketkeepers didn't really have much. Alex Gordon-Walker and Ben Fletcher were the only two named keepers playing with 27 and 17 points respectively. And as at this point of the pod, we always ask our guests, there's only a couple of weeks of the season to go, but Puff, who would you recommend people picking their fantasy team for the last couple of weeks of the season?
I'll go Drew, yeah. Drew, Logan. Logan hasn't scored runs, probably. It's going by the law of averages. He should be scoring big runs next couple of weeks. Damon has been bowling well, so maybe Damon amongst the bowlers.
I mean, if you're picking a three-a-side cricket team, Drew, Damon and Logan's a pretty bloody solid three-a-side team.
It is, yeah. I think Bolcher also comes to the East. He's coming back to play on Saturday, so fancy him getting some wickets.
Nice one. And Beasley, what about you?
Again, it's all down to availabilities and stuff, but I did notice when I was flicking through the fantasy that 0% picked Max Wright, which is somewhat alarming, considering you're definitely, I've played with you 3 weekends, you've got runs each one of those. 2% picked Leo N, which is slightly, maybe they don't know about him, but he can score runs.
He could definitely score runs.
Yeah, obviously, definitely score runs. Drew, again, is a dead cert with the wickets. Logan, going to get your points. Damon, going to get your points. Umar's definitely going to get your points. Mr. Gumpert is also there or thereabouts, isn't he? He got picked, I noticed, the batsman. 86% of teams picked him. There's probably a reason for that, I guess. Yeah, those are my minor insights.
Yeah, I would say that's a good shout. I mean, Umar, definitely a good shout. Selected by 51% of teams at the moment. And he's the second highest scoring batter in the fantasy this season. So can't go with that. Leo Niebuhr, also sixth highest, despite only being 1.2 million. Selected by 2%. Sixth highest scoring batsman in fantasy this season. So you'd be wrong not to back Leo the rest of this season for sure. And so that concludes.
I don't have a fantasy team, guys, but please help me on this. Is there a certain limit of transfers? Because I did notice some wonky stats this week. 45% of people selected Ollie Lonsdale, who, as far as I know, is in Canada.
Yes, well,
33% picked Lewis Wilby, and 37% picked CRS, and none of them were playing. So I guess that's probably down to transfers or everyone conceding to Trent.
I think it's very, very big combination of those two things. As we say, we've got people like Richard James, six offenders, which is obviously a fantastically named team, as oft mentioned. But his team this week featured only two players who actually played. So, for example, I think he might have given up his team.
You get that vibe.
Either way, give me pick Nick Ridgeway, who I don't think has played a single game this season. In his team, I'm not sure he ever started. I don't think he started with a.
Well, there's loyalty for you. Well, exactly. There's loyalty for you.
But I think that concludes this section of Fantasy Cricket.
Thanks, guys. Now, Max alluded earlier to the opening partnership stand I had with one Stephen Brito at the Actonians match. Watching from the other side, it was great to see a player who was perhaps not at his best, perhaps not feeling the most confident, build all of this back up and then put into practice all his training and get back into some sense of form. Max and I caught up with Steve Brito at the end of the game to give us his take on batting well.
I'm here at Old Actonian CC with two of Plough's finest opening bats to explain the art of batting. Brito, give us, I don't even know what to say here, give us your insights into how to bat.
I think I said it about a minute ago before we start this, I feel a bit of an imposter, but I had a good day today. How to bat, I think it's just be as natural, be you, and be as natural as you are, whatever that is, and whatever your tempo is, and whatever your style is, and trust in it. And today was better. Umar was super good up front, to be honest. Gave me a lot of confidence about us staying together and stuff like that. I think partnerships in batting is the most important bit. It's about how you apply pressure to the opposition and make them feel more pressure than they would otherwise do. I think the fall of wicket sometimes makes them feel comfortable. I think today was a really good day. So I think always like bat together, play to your strengths and trust in your ability. Everyone's got a ton of ability in this club, and I think we just need to keep believing in it.
Nice. And Umar, similar to you, you had another good day today as well. What would you add to what Steve's just said?
Yeah, mate, I think we focus a lot on hitting the ball, but actually if you watch the last test match, they did a lot of analysis on hitting the ball late, and I think that's super important. You've got to time it. I got out today because I hit the ball too early. So it is all about tempo, batting in partnerships, but at the same time your own game matters as well. So you've got to figure out and time the ball right, and that takes time, figuring out what the wicket's like and figuring out what the bowlers are like.
So throughout, no, let's try it again. Let's start that again. Another experience that I had on the Sunday game at the Actonians was throughout batting, we kept hearing from the fielders, from the players themselves, and I think Max, you guys heard it when you were at the balcony. The entire squad, the entire team of the Actonians were very excited about a specific match that was going on. Later, for me, as I was batting at the time, we found out that they were all very excited about their women's team, who had been playing in a women's league. Luckily for us, the women's team came back to the Actonians ground to have some drinks and catch up with their friends. So Max and I caught up with Antonia and Lucy to talk about what their experiences are at the grassroots level of women's cricket.
So, ladies and gentlemen of the Plough, we're Heractonians after our quick win over the team on the Sunday. And we've been joined today by special guests. We've got Antonia and Lucy, who are both part of the first women's team of the Actonians. They're going to give us a quick overview on what it's like to play amateur women's cricket.
Hiya. So I'm part of the women's team, as is Lucy. And we'd say, yeah, women's cricket is growing a lot recently. We've got like growing participations. We've got people at the low level who are really increasing, as well as the standard of our first team. It's been really successful. We've just come to the end of a really good season. Standard of women's cricket is improving a lot. Mm.
Thanks, Antonia. Lucy?
Yeah, just completely agree with everything Antonia said. And just to sort of add to it, the second team this season is new. And we've just completely... I don't know what I'm saying.
It's fine, we can cut it.
Yeah, cut it out. Oh, I literally was going to say something, I can't remember what I was going
to
say.
Do you want me to ask a question?
Yeah, go on then. I forgot what I was going to say.
Lucy, can you tell us about the state of the competition in the women's game at the moment?
So actually, yeah, we were in a league with, I think it was about 5 teams. And actually, I would say, unfortunately, there's quite actually a dramatic difference between, say, 3 out of the 5 teams to the other 2. The standard, when it's good, it's really good. But unfortunately, not every team is able to sort of be at that standard just simply because of, the club, the funding, etc. But actually, yeah, this season it's been a big range. And I think next season the league's going to try and do a big reshuffle actually of the leagues and the teams so that we are able to regularly face a high standard at a competitive level.
So how long has Actonians had a women's section specifically?
I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but we've had it for quite a long time. I've been here since I was, for the last 10 years, as has Lucy. We merged with Gunnersbury, I think, about 15, 20 years ago, so we were under a different name. But we have had people in this club who have been playing for the women for at least 20 years.
I think officially it has been something around sort of like 20 years for the women's team, because we did merge, we came here, and then Actonians is such an inclusive club that we're now at a point where we do put 2 women's teams.
Yeah, it does seem, I arrived quite early today, sort of the All Stars cricket was happening, and it was also really nice while the men were playing earlier.
they were sort of commenting on your game, saying, because we have it the same on our WhatsApp chat, saying X has got this many wickets and these runs, the same thing was happening. They were saying someone's got an 8-foot, and we were like, well, that's really cool, like going on another game.
Yeah, it was amazing. In fact, the 8-foot came from a 14-year-old. She plays for Middlesex. She's incredible, and her whole family are involved in the club, so she's doing really well.
But yeah, exactly, the men are so supportive, and actually we enjoy having that sort of camaraderie between the men and women, because it really, we even had lots of the men coming down to support to see us up in North London, so just having that support really just helps us to improve as a club and as a unit.
That's great. Before we sign off, Lucy, you said you also play for the men's team. What's that like for you?
Yeah, it's good. I've played for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm the vice captain of the third 11. And it's good overall. I think we're a very inclusive club. So there's a few players who kind of cross over. And it's good. We've had a good season.
Sorry, that was Antonio. Thank you so much. Before we go, this podcast is all about experience in whatever you do. So are you, Antonio, a batter, bowler?
I'm a bowler, a bowling all-rounder.
Bowling all-rounder. What's your top tip for bowling?
Make sure your seam position is good. And yeah. Watch.
The same as Ollie Lonsdale, to be fair. So.
There we go. Seam position is key. And Lucy, are you a batter, bowler?
I guess as of this season, more a batter. Yeah, no, I would be an all-rounder, but this season been more batting focused.
And what's your top batting tip?
Just get forward to the ball.
Because, there you have it. Get on the front foot.
Definitely.
From Antonia, Lucy, thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. That was great.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
Any other business?
Okay, guys, so any other business? One of my duties this week is to run through the awards from people's various performances over the weekend. I've alluded to one quite heavily. I'm going to start with our Spirit of Cricket Award, which I've flogged this twice already, so I feel pretty strongly about it. Someone give up their Sunday, just turn up, play with a bunch of folks they've never met. So Tom Glyn-Jones's flatmate Marcus is given my Spirit of Cricket Award this week for turning up for our Sunday oppo. What a superb effort, young man. Really, really impressed with that. Anyway, that's that one out of the way. Loves to Bat Award. We've obviously been through a number of performances. On Saturday, Benny Cobbett got into the 40s. Puff, very respectfully, got over the half century mark over at Morden with a very impressive innings, as far as I've heard. Umar and Steve performed extremely well on Sunday. And Umar's already alluded to Stephen getting back in the runs and how hard he works to do that. Max hit a very Gumpert-like 48 off half as many balls on Sunday in my game. But I'm really going to go to town and talk about Leo Niebuhr, who really impressed me on Saturday. Although I will say, don't you dare turn up on a cricket pitch with blue Nikes again. Not acceptable. But other than that, an utterly astounding performance. And I genuinely mean that from the heart. That guy lasted 97 balls, innings of 77 on a, clearly, as you can see from the scorebook, not a straightforward innings to anchor. And he did it very well. Level of focus, concentration. Look, I don't know who's seen him bat. He's not the most orthodox cricketer I've seen, but he wanted to stay out there, and if he didn't, things would have been very different. So my Loves to Bat Award for this week is going to Leo N. Third man, I've mentioned Tom Glyn-Jones's minor juggle, taking an immense grab against Vishwas CC. I can't discuss the other Saturday or Sunday games, but I know you guys have mentioned some good fielding. Puff had a run out. But I think this fella's got it in the bag, and he had it in the bag since Umar and I saw him leap towards the clouds and clutch a ball that he shouldn't have been anywhere near on Saturday. And that is Logan Cassin. His second catch, by the way, wasn't quite as stunning to watch, but it was a very tricky running backwards over the shoulder, ball spinning, looping, weaving around in the air. and he made it look very simple. He made it look like he was an adult fielding with a load of kids, is how I'd put it. So, third man award, Logan Cassin, no doubt. Line and length. Are we on to next chaps? Is that the next one, I believe? Cool.
Yep.
Listen, the Saturday game I played in, there were some good bowling performances. I wouldn't single anyone out for the line and length award. Just we were a bit too expensive on the day, I'd say. Obviously, over at... I see Damon picked up quite a few wickets over the weekend. Ashish Paul, fellow guest against Actonians, I apologise, 7 overs, 1 maiden, 16 runs, 2 wickets. That's what he does every time he turns out. I'm going to focus on the Vishwas game, and I'm going to get you guys to decide. I'm afraid, gentlemen, it's over to you. Drew Withers bowled 5 overs, 2 maidens, 1 wicket for 6 runs. And I managed to bowl 7 overs, 2 maidens, 1 wicket for 9 runs. So, toss your coins, ladies and gentlemen.
They're both pretty expensive spells.
Over to you.
But,
yeah.
Really let the game get away.
Yeah. You were just giving those runs away.
Yeah, look, the way I interpreted it, guys, get it on the spot, give nothing away. That's what Drew and I did on Sunday morning.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna put another person in the hat there. Max Wright, bowling on Sunday, did not go for 200 off his 2 overs.
Well done, Max.
I would like to point out again Oh, I'm now down to the third best strike rate in the club. Unfortunately, I've dropped a place. Charlie Evans is now the best strike rate in the club with his 2 wickets and 2 overs.
Hard to top that until he plays again, I think.
Personally, I'm leaning towards Ed Beasley here. Not just because he's our special guest on the pod, but also because he bowled like 2 more overs.
I think he's fine.
Most kind. I'll take what I can get. So I think, according to my notes, that's it, guys. Sledges. I do remember Ainsley being reasonably lively on Saturday, but there was nothing really that stood out. Obviously, Max has already alluded to his Bob the Builder sledge, and I think that's obviously going to win this week. Max, would you just enlighten everyone further on that one, please?
Yes, well, I got the Bob the Builder from a 14-year-old, but I did also hit a 14-year-old back on Saturday while wicket-keeping, which I would like to share as well, which was... he played and missed a big one outside the off stump. So I went back to basics and screamed a nice, "He's too young to drive," which is an old chestnut. Which
touche. Touche. Yeah.
I do have something to throw in the hat here. I think on Sunday as a team, so following, so I was umpiring at the time when Max came out to bat and got the chat from the 14-year-old. And I proceeded to say to one of his teammates that was bad chat. And he said, "Don't worry, when this guy comes out to bat," and they, to be fair to them, they sledged him back and they said, "We hope your batting is as good as your chat," which was great. So they sledged their own player. But he said to me, "When this guy comes out to bat, you have to say, 'Here comes Archie's little brother.'" And to our credit, to the entire team's credit, the moment this guy came out to bat, every single person was focused on him being Archie's little brother. To the point that when he did get out, somebody said, "Archie would not be proud of that shot." So I'd like to nominate the entire team on Sunday playing against the Actonians for the sledge of the week.
Quality. Good work, gentlemen.
Lots of good sledge.
as I alluded to earlier, we do have an absolute treat for all the bowlers who are part of the Ploughman's Cricket Club, and indeed to all our listeners across the globe. We are joined today by two incredible bowlers in their time. Both Ed Beasley and Ashish Paul have had illustrious bowling careers. Max, can you give our audience a quick rundown on their stats, please?
Indeed, I can. Ashish Paul has he's taken 279 wickets for the Plough in his 172 matches, so only 21 more needed for the triple century, at an average of only 16 runs, which is pretty bloody impressive, given I've taken two wickets for an average of 20 in my two stints of bowling, given I've been bowling for the club for 14 years. That's very impressive. Best figures of 6 for 15, which is a pretty good day out. And in the, also, Puff's got great line and length, and he's bowled, we only have wides and no balls since 2016, but Puff only has bowled 81 wides in the last 6 years. Ollie Lonsdale bowled 77 this year. So basically, Puff's got that control factor that others might not have in their arsenal. And Ed Beasley, again, an outrageous set of stats. 64 wickets taken in 56 games. 32 maiden, one in every 10 overs is a more than one in every 10 overs is a maiden. Average of 20.95, so very, very good for an off spinner, especially economy of four. That is outrageous and disgusting, quite frankly. Best for 552, yeah, which I think was your debut. Yeah, is that right, Bees? 552 on your debut.
Yeah.
So it's really only been downhill since then. But other than that, but again, another excellent bowler to be having on the podcast right now.
So, gentlemen, my first question to you is, let's start broad. Do bowlers make good captains? Beasley, what's your answer?
I'm gonna put it out there and say the better captains I've had in my life, not just the Ploughman's, all throughout cricket, have been bowlers. And I think part of that is obviously an understanding of the field, duh. But they're able to get into your mindset. When you're going out there bowling, they know what you're trying to do. You've got a shared goal, obviously, keeping runs down and getting wickets, sure. But I think, certainly in my experience, the best captains I've played under have been key bowlers as well.
And Puff, what do you mean by... Sorry,
no, go ahead. I agree. And, especially if you have a bowler who can bat a bit, he understands both trade, right? And you have a good understanding of the batsman, Ed said, then you can place the field accordingly. And it doesn't take long for someone, a good bowler to figure out how a batsman will play a shot.
Excellent. And Puff, can you elaborate on what you meant by bowlers are better blokes?
Generally are. Just look around you. Steve Smith is a batsman.
Calling out Steve Smith on the pod. So next question, guys. For both of you, you've obviously had incredible careers and bowled some incredible stats. What is your most effective ball in your arsenal?
Well, I'll go first. Mine is the one that pitches, that goes straight, pitches around middle, and then just seams out. That's my stock delivery. I've used it over the years, and it's still effective. I mean, if batsmen play me every day, they seem to struggle with that particular ball. So I always use it as often as I can.
And Ed, as someone who bowls, maybe not as quick.
Well, obviously, I've got a pretty standard stock delivery. I'm slightly quicker than the average off spinner, I would say. But obviously, landing it 8 inches outside off stump, hoping it's going to hit the top of off stump, is what you should be doing pretty much with your eyes closed if you're an off spinner. So That's the delivery that gets wickets. That's the delivery that they miss. You win. You know, I wish, looking back over bowl, I wish I'd netted a lot more in my life, so I'd been able to maybe conjure up a bit more variation. I've got a good leg spinner, but that only comes out when I'm feeling really confident because, as you know, playing league games, you're like, oh, if I bowl a full toss, it's going for four. That kind of, you know, but... yeah, that's excellent. My summary, guys.
Now, as bowlers, as premier bowlers that you both are, do you, and I'm hoping this is a completely different answer for each of you, but it may not be. Do you prefer bowling maidens or getting wickets?
That's a very, very interesting. Oh yeah, sure. Go on. I'll jump. Interesting question. Very
go on, Ash. You go. Go for it, mate.
Obsessed with bowling maidens. I have, you know, when I look at the stats on our website, I actually look first at maidens and then I look at wickets and average. So I used to be obsessed with bowling maidens. I used to get very proud, feel very proud bowling more maidens, and I think I've bowled quite a few. I think over my career in the plough, I would have bowled an average of two maidens or a little bit more than that every game.
Max? Can you supplement that stat? How many maidens has, how many maidens has Puff bowled?
In the stats here, we have Puff has bowled 232 maidens in 1,323 Oof. Overs. So one in six overs. Sorry.
That's incredible. Ed?
You may have seen my reaction on the camera, hands down. I'm obsessed with not conceding runs. And should I concede any runs, it makes me red with rage. So maidens is the answer, hands down. I know you don't get picked for bowling maidens, you get picked for taking wickets, and you get dropped for not taking wickets if you're in a cricket team, for example. But a byproduct is getting wickets, of keeping those runs, you know, putting the pressure on. That's all I'm interested in, is creating pressure for a batsman so he then makes a mistake, be it in my over or the next over. I couldn't care less, to be honest, so long as runs are kept excellent. Down. That's my
job. Have an interesting story here. So, I, like I said, I used to be obsessed with bowling maidens. I still am. But I had, I used to bowl in the channel, right, which is outside off or pitch off stump, seam out or swing out, batsman mostly hit and miss. All right, they swing and miss. I had a chat with James Sasato about 3 or 4 years back, and I said, so he was telling me, you bowl well today. And I said, yeah, this is what I do. I wake up in the morning, come, bowl outside off, 3-4 maidens in a game, and I either will bowl with Bush or with someone else, whoever I'm bowling with. It'll be, you know, in partnership, a spell of, say, 18 overs, and we give away only about 40, 45 runs, max 50 runs. And Tis said to me, he said, I wouldn't mind you going for 30 runs and taking a few more wickets. And I have never netted, but that winter I went to the net about twice. I just bowled on the leg stump. And the next season I started bowling a leg stump line. And yes, I started getting more rewards. And I started getting more wickets. So yes, a good nice little chat with Tis. And I changed my approach and I got more rewards.
There you have it, guys. Puff obsessed with nets. Twice over the winter, he just loves to net. So you've just alluded to bowling in partnerships, and that's a really interesting concept. We heard earlier from Brito about batting and the importance of partnerships within batting. As you guys both love to bowl maidens, can you talk to us a little bit more about bowling in partnership? Sorry.
I'll jump in. Listen, I don't regularly bowl with someone in a partnership, but I'll go back to something I previously said about 3 or 4 minutes ago. Is we love to get wickets with bowlers, but if I've pinned someone down at one end and he decides to open up at the other end and skies one to mid wicket, and that's the wicket I should have. No, and that doesn't work with me. Wickets are obviously team wickets, aren't they? If I you know, for me, a good day out is conceding as little runs as possible. Yes, wickets are great and lovely, and we'd like to have a number in other than zero in that wicket column. But generally, you know, you should know your role. And your role, my role personally, I believe, is to try and keep runs down and keep the pressure on. And if someone else picks up those wickets through the pressure being put, great, all good.
Yeah, that's true. My tuppence with... If not more, they're equally important as a batting partnership. For example, if you look at our winning stats as a team in Plowmans, if you look at the winning stats when Bush and Grazer used to open for us, we've won more games with them opening. And then I started opening sometimes with Bush, with Bolshaw, right? The win percentage for the team is higher. So it is very important. Now, it's also, you know, there's a technical aspect to it as well. If I bowl with another bowler like, say, Matt Bolshaw or Grazer or Lonan, who are, you know, traditional, conventional swing bowlers, the ball lasts longer. I remember opening with someone who loves to bowl cross seam. By the fourth over, the ball is gone, right? And you have another 30 overs to bowl with a ball that probably won't move. So yes, bowling partnership is very, very important. And you know how the bowler uses a new ball is very, very vital to a team winning a game.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. So just to wrap it up, absolutely. I know, Puff, you do a lot of coaching with the guys at Nets and obviously with your son. Just broadly, what are your top tips for bowling? Let's go over to Ed first.
Well, I obviously speak as an off spinner, but getting a grip right, index finger tight against the seam. Spin bowling is all about net time, isn't it? It's all about getting it on the spot. You've got a standard. If you get your line and length right, everything will come. If you're a youngish bowler, I wouldn't worry too much about variation. Get that stop ball, that one pitching 8 inches out off stump, get that bang on, and luck will come your way.
Thanks, Ed.
I guess that's all I have to say, guys.
Oh, but I think for seamers, the most important thing is run-up. If you have a nice run-up, very repeatable action, then, you know, bowling is not hard work. But if you don't have it, it's a lot of hard work. And I see a lot of bowlers sometimes, second advice I'll give you, I see a lot of bowlers come to net to bowl for an hour to a batsman. You essentially become a net bowler then because you're giving the batsman a practice. But I don't think you get anything out of it. You get something out of it. But I think if you really want to improve, it's just, you know, get a small towel, a kitchen towel, put it on the pitch, on the spot that you want to pitch. Try to hit it there with no batsman around. Once you hit the spot, 80% of the balls are good balls.
Fantastic. Well, One final thing for, and this is for Matt Spencer, who is a great friend and host of the pod. Can both of you give us your best LBW appeal? We'll go to Ed first.
You might want to move those headphones, dudes.
Really? How's that?
Excellent stuff. I'm sure Spence will be thanking you both.
So that about wraps up everything we wanted to discuss on today's Thanks for Coming podcast. So to our special guests, Ashish Paul, thanks for coming, and Ed Beasley, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Max. And I'd like to thank all the listeners out there and my co-host, Max Wright. Thanks for coming. Now, before we go, we do have a final bit of content for you. Those playing at the Saturday Actonians game will have known that it was Simon Carson's final game of the season, potentially. Our esteemed leader, Kim Jong Carson, is now going to be away in Turkey for potentially the rest of the season, but maybe back for the last game. So we thought it was apt, given his excellent service to the club this year, for him to wrap up this week's episode.
We mark today as Simon Carson's last game of the season. He is off to sunny Turkey and will be missing club day. So to end the pod, we'll pass it over to Carson for a quick overview on the season.
Yeah, well, thank you. I may be back for the last game of the season. I'm not sure, but I'm in town. I just don't know if I'm available. But yeah, it hasn't been a bad season, has it? We certainly haven't achieved what we expected to insofar as winning the second and Premiership divisions. That said, I think we were pretty convinced at the beginning of the season or midway through the season that this was going to be a rebuilding year. We lost a lot of very good players over the winter to Australia and New Zealand. I think that was to be expected. Could we have done better? Yeah, I think we could. Slightly disappointed with the season, but we've had fun. And there have been a lot of individual contributions. Some players have really shone through. Yeah, and thank you very much indeed to everyone who's featured on the podcast over the season. It's been a great asset to the club. And thanks for coming. Thank you.
Jason!
This is Shane Warne. Make sure you plough on.
Do Ploughman CC. Plough on, guys. Thank you too much.
No, we didn't win the league by accident. We did that by design. It was very much planned.
I just try to get it in the right spot, really, and see what happens.
He said to me, mate, I really think you should put your lid on. Next ball, Bolney bouncer. We've been for six. So.
This club is beyond cricket.
Ploughman's cricket is the greatest club in the world.